and welcome to Lisa.fm. I'm Lisa Osborne. Today we're talking about managing your feelings for complete confidence. You get your mind and feelings going in the right direction and you can achieve anything. My guest is Dr. Sheena Hankin, who was named one of New York's most popular therapists by the New York Times Magazine. She's been on television and in magazines as an expert on personality and confidence. And her latest book is called Complete Confidence, a Handbook, which will be out in paperback this spring. Sheena, thank you so much for being here today. What made you write this book? First of all, let's talk a little bit about your background. You know complete confidence because you had to live it from the bottom up. You didn't become a therapist until you were divorced with two young children.
Four young children. Yes, I had four boys, no money, and a divorce that left me without anything, including a roof. And I never, ever thought anything like that would happen to me. I was a woman who was dependent on her husband in many ways, emotionally and financially. And when everything, he lost everything, including us. And when I stood there, you know, with literally what we had on with my four kids, and I thought I can either go down the alcoholic road like my father, you know, and not deal with it, or I can get my act together, even though I had no sense of confidence at all and didn't know how I was going to do it. And so I went back to graduate school, graduated, and became a therapist, and got my long-suffering mother to help me with the kids for a year or two till I could get on my feet. She had a house. We moved in. She really hadn't much choice. Couldn't see me on the street. And here I am today. It's amazing. In my own house in beautiful street in Manhattan, having come all this far.
Now, did you visualize this before you got there? I mean, what gave you the confidence and the courage as opposed to just taking what you grew up with, seeing your alcoholic father?
I think that it wasn't for myself. I didn't value myself enough, but it was for my sons. I could not see them without shoes. And I often talk about the shoes story. You know, you can buy secondhand clothes in shops and wash them for boys, and they don't know or notice because they're boys. You can't buy secondhand shoes, and shoes are expensive. My sons are 6'5" down to 6'3". I have four of them. So they were growing every 6 months, and I thought, this is ridiculous. Other people seem to manage to do this, to look after their children. One thing I had was a good education. I'm a smart person. I knew that much, though I felt stupid, but I knew somehow I could pass exams. And I thought, there's got to be some way to do it. So when I chose my profession, because it fitted with what I already learned, I was an educator before that and also did some counseling, and I thought, you know, I'm going to make it work. And I just worked hard and overcame a lot of the self-doubt and self-criticism, which was my life. I think I spent all day, every day, telling myself I was stupid, I was fat, even though I really, looking back at the pictures, I wasn't fat, that I was too old in my late 30s, mid-30s, to really get it together. Actually, young 30s. Too old, you know, I got too many children. It was too hard, and it wasn't possible. And it was only when I realized that I went around creating shame all the time, and shame is such a handicap. If you tell yourself that any of those things, you are handicapping yourself against all your potential to take care of yourself and your family.
And shame can be so huge because it could be anything. It could be something, you could be shameful of something that was your fault or not your fault. What do you recommend that people do to start to loosen the grip on shame?
Well, the first thing I want them to do, and it's a simple but profound thing to look at. I don't believe that adults should blame themselves for anything. Short of hurting people accidentally, step on somebody's foot, you can apologize. But most adults in this world, most human beings, are well-meaning, good people who try and do the best they can. I have a very optimistic and good view of humankind. We're meant to get along. We try to get along. We care for each other. And if I make a mistake, or it's usually just something that I didn't know enough or whatever, I must not blame myself for that. I can learn from it. It's maybe a little bit of an education, and I can certainly try to put it right, but I'm not going to blame myself for that. Once you give up blaming yourself and say, well, this happened, what can I do about it? You really undermine, and then comfort the shame and say, I have a shame habit. I tend to blame myself, even for things I don't do. Some people blame themselves for things that are outside their control. Blame themselves, for instance, for other people being upset. Nobody must be upset around me. Somehow I'm not doing my job. That's the caretaker in so many of us women. If you stop blaming yourself and comfort yourself and find the words to do that, we all need our own language. We comfort our babies, our children, with words. We do. It'll be okay. it's fine, don't worry. They may not have all that much meaning, but these words, if we repeat them, become a kind of mantra of comfort that we never really develop. The brain is designed to comfort us and calm down. It's not designed to be on high alert all the time. I have a program for that in my book and in my work, and train people retrain their brains to be comforting, not critical. How's that?
I think that's great, and I like how you use the winning hand, losing hand analogies in your book. And you said that the most common actions that people take to put themselves down are comparing,
right,
critiquing,
criticizing, right?
Calamitizing.
Calamitizing.
Thinking of the worst that could happen?
Well, that's the victim in us, you know, the calamitizers. You know, the people who say, my life is terrible, I can't take it, you know, it's raining. I've had people say that, you know, I got wet, I have to go to work, and I don't feel like it. My mother-in-law is a terrible person, she's ruining my life. Do you hear that? The drama in that sentence?
Right.
She is ruining my life, right?
So she's giving the power to the mother-in-law.
Well, of course. I'm making it very histrionic. And these are habits people have. I'm not being critical, Lisa. People just don't know that that isn't the way you express yourself. They got that from their family, because some people's families, you know, are very, very dramatic in the way they describe things. And so one of the things I try to get people to do who have a self-pity habit of feeling easily victimized and very angry is to get them to stop blaming other people, right, for their bad manners, inaction, laziness, all the things that happen in the world, but to really take a more positive view and say, what can I do about it? And one of the things we can do is stand up for ourselves against the mother-in-law it's not ruining our life, but it's making it difficult. It makes a difference when you say, it's making it a little difficult, I need to do something, she's ruining my life. So take the drama out of it, look at the self-pity as a habit, not as a criticism, and say, I can take some action here. And all of us human beings have to trust ourselves to take care of ourselves in the sense that we mustn't be disrespected. We're not disrespected, we've got to calmly and directly, without blame, stop people from doing that. And that really makes you feel better.
And some good points, and I liked what you mentioned earlier about being nurturing to yourself and saying nice things to yourself as you would to other people when you're comforting others to keep...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
...the kind words to yourself. Now, you mentioned being assertive and not letting anyone take advantage or I forget what word you actually said.
Disrespecting is a word I like.
Right, disrespecting you. But if you can, especially for women, because women can get the bitch name, how can you explain the difference between bullying and being self-assertive? And I think for women, sometimes we think any firm words, they'll think I'm a bitch, or I'll be awful. So I think maybe women have a harder time with this than men, or women might tend to get labeled a little sooner than men.
And I'll certainly answer that. Before I do that, let me just say something. Women tend to be raised to be far more caretakers of others. It's partly genetic with babies, but partly because, you know, we're raised in the environment we should take care of people. And take care of their feelings. You really can't take care of other people's feelings unless they're children.
So you can't be responsible for others' feelings.
No.
You can just be your best person and you have to leave the rest to someone else. You're not responsible.
But you can be sensitive to their feelings. So if I'm going to be upset with someone who I think has been disrespectful to me, I want to deliver that message sensitively. And I think the word assertive got us in trouble way back in the 70s. You know, we're going around demanding our rights. I don't think that wasn't so great. So I like to deliver annoyance messages. I like the word annoyance better than rage. In a way that's respectful of the other person. If I want respect, I'd better deliver my message to you that I think you're being disrespectful to me in a way that models it. And that's a nice way to look at anger, how to do it. It's a formula. So I'm not going to say, how dare you do that to me? What kind of person are you, you idiot? You know, it's no way to treat me. Especially if you're in the workplace. We've all worked for rageful bosses, most of us anyway, and
mm-hmm.
know how awful that is. You might say that, look, I'm sure you're well-intentioned, or maybe you didn't understand, or maybe I wasn't clear, or maybe you don't realize that kind of thing upsets me. Give them a little bit of an out, but make a statement. And then don't discuss it. I do not believe in talking about respect. I do not believe in having these long discussions about why I did this, you did this, I didn't mean it. If I feel disrespected, I'm going to say it, and then I'm going to leave it. I'm not going to discuss it. It's much more powerful to make a statement, like a soundbite that politicians make.
And to do it in the moment, because you could almost shock the person or startle them. Maybe they didn't realize they were being disrespectful in that moment. And also for you not getting all emotional over it, you're not starting a push-pull type of a thing.
Well, you've got to comfort yourself first before you do it. It might take a nanosecond to calm that brain. That's a skill like driving, to calm the brain. Calm down, Sheena. Don't overreact, which is my comfort phrase. And then I'm going to say what I'm going to say without blame. And I think at first, for people who are not used to doing this, I don't mind if you do it later. As long as you do it, go back and you can even send an email if you're scared to do it, and make a telephone call and leave a message when the person isn't there. It's not cowardly to do this to people who are not used to or frightened of frightened of conflict. To get practice by doing it slowly. I don't really think we have to go out there and demand, that we can be respected. If you're not used to it, people won't do it, Lisa. You've got to practice. It's a skill. You learn slowly, and eventually you'll get where you're so right that we need to do it at the time.
Okay, got it. So you don't have to do it at the time, but if you were feeling slighted or that they were disrespectful, do speak up for yourself in a, at some point without being accusing and without being the victim.
Here's the funny thing. If you don't do that, when other people disrespect you, finally get to believe it, because human beings are easily influenced by propaganda. So if I let somebody disrespect me consistently, say a boss or my boyfriend, my husband even, if I constantly let it happen, I'm going to kind of begin to feel shame myself, even though it makes no sense, because propaganda works, and that's partly why we stand our ground.
Right, and some people, that's part of their plan to make you feel smaller or to keep you where you are, and it could also be their lack of confidence in themselves that makes treat people that way.
When you hear blaming other people, they don't have confidence. You know that they want to lay it off on others.
Because we're responsible for our own life.
Right. Most fights I've had with my husband, and we've all had fights with our husband. We're pretty good at it now. We don't do it much, but we used to. I didn't want to look at my part in that at all. I wanted to blame him. And that's so common in marriage and relationships, that we want to blame the other person and be self-righteously right. I don't believe in right. I believe in, what's my part in this one? Maybe I did contribute to it. Maybe when he comes in from work and I want his attention right away, I'm not giving him the half hour he might need to calm down and look at the paper, because I'm feeling sorry for myself. Look for your part in it. It's amazing when you do that. It lowers your anger, and then if you want more attention, you can ask for it kindly. You'll get it more likely.
Such great points by Dr. Sheena Henkin, who's the author of Complete Confidence. You will find it in bookstores in paperback this spring, but in the meantime, it's a bright yellow hardback with big print, Complete Confidence. And find out more about Sheena and her work at sheenahhankin.com. That's sheenahhankin.com. Sheena, thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to speaking with you again here at Lisa.fm.
It was a joy.
This is Lisa Osborne on Lisa.fm.